Testing, 1, 2. Good evening. Thank you for having me today. I'm Arlene Mills, as I was so nicely introduced. And I like to come out and make sure that I leave everybody here a little more empowered to our system than they were before they met me. Possibly we can get this turned down just a little bit. Oh, thank you. We're getting turned down requests. So the information that I give you is I try to walk you through the system like I see it every day. To give you a little bit of information about myself, I was born in downtown Los Angeles. We won't get into the year. And I'm a native of the city. And for quite a few generations, I believe 8 or 9 by now. And actually, my mother rode Angel's Flight. I don't know if any of you remember Angel's Flight. My mother worked at Central Market, and she would pay to go home at night one way because it was so expensive, 5 cents. And she would walk to work in the morning. So she said it was in my blood. I guess so. I started with Metro 25 years ago, and I have been on the train side for the last 12 years. When you get to Metro, it isn't as quite it looks really fun and exciting to do on the outside, but it's actually a very, very serious system. When you're first introduced into even attempting to operate a train, you have to have outstanding, impeccable standing with them in your personal record. So you're re-interviewed, and it takes a minimum of 3 years at that time. So I was finally able to do that, and I went over and started operating train. When I got there, it was, wow. I said, I might not be able to do this job. This job might be bigger than me. But Metro invests a lot of money into each one of us. I hear it's probably about $30,000 to convert one of your personnel to become a full-time train operator. We learn a whole new system. We learn how to read lights differently, how to change the tracks. Female or male, I'm expected to get out there and operate those switches manually, whether or not the control center has control of them. I'll have to physically get out there, and they call it throwing the switches. So doing the essential job in the introduction, that's what you know going in, and you do it anyway. Because there is a great love of trains. Something about trains is very appealing to most people, I think. And I think it starts when we're kids. So when you get over to Metro, everything is kept very serious, even though you're infatuated with the train. And you love the idea that you're going to actually get in to operate one. I will tell you the truth. The first time I ever sat in that seat and that train took off, I almost threw up. It was such a huge piece of equipment. We have two systems at Metro. One is an ATO, automatic train operation. And one is an MTO, a manual train operation. So one system runs by me computing a number and a code, and it bursts on its own, and it stops on its own. So the first time you're in the seat, and you're in, like, the red car underground, and you feel the power of 6 cars taking off and stopping on their own, and you see people get real close to the edge and look, you're like, holy smokes. But the system has so many buffers to help you navigate as safely as you can into each one of those platforms. So that in itself is overwhelming. Now it's, you know, many years have gone by. It doesn't bother me in the least. But the systems are unbelievable. The amount of protection that's in our system, especially for our passengers, is pretty amazing. One of the things that we do, even as operators, we have to have these radios on 24/7, and you better be listening. There's code ones that go out, Code ones address everybody on the train that's operating. If you miss a code one, they will stop your train. As Charles will get into later, they will shut my system down. They will not let me go into the next station. They better never lose communication with you. And if in one day you have lost communication, you're going to see your manager by the time your shift ends. And if they felt it's serious enough, they're going to pull you out of the seat and take you upstairs right then and there, right that minute. So the communication for us is so crucial because the communication depends on how safe we can operate for our passengers. If they lose track of a train, that's serious business because train movement depends on train movement. You know, I don't like to bring it up because there are a lot of lost souls when we had the Metrolink accident. And that's weighs very heavy. But I want you to know as passengers, our system was built with the automatic train protection that you hear so much about that now they're trying to put into Metrolink and all those other systems like Southern Pacific. They do not have the ability to read lights. Our trains read lights. So our trains will not ever go past a red light. We have a dead man feature in our train. So if by some chance I pass out, I have a heart attack, or I lose physical touch with my train, the dead man feature shuts the train off. The automatic train protection senses that I'm within a 2-mile radius, and Charles will correct the stats on this because he's a techie guy, but my train will never allow me to interface with another train. It will lose its power. Now, that's a system Metro had the foresight of building into every train we ever built. So we already have that system. It will never be an added expense for us because it was initiated into our system all the way back to the blue line. If you're familiar with our system, our oldest line is the blue line. The second is the red, and then the gold, and then, I'm sorry, green, and then the expo, and being our newest line. All of these lines have that feature. So this piece of equipment, this little simple radio, is actually doing the same thing. It's making sure at no time is there ever a lost connection. And we do that throughout the train. Now, when you, the passenger, board the train, you may not know it, but you also have the same direct communication to me. Aboard every car is a microphone, and it sits at the end of each train. And then in the center where the train is articulated, where it can bend to get around corners, there's two more of them. Well, if you hit them, immediately I can hear your voice. And you'll, whatever it is. Some people will ask me, is there a McDonald's around here? And I have to refer them to the PTEL, which is a platform telephone. And then that's another way that we try to bridge that lack of connection that you people feel. You know, I have a sister. Ironically, I have two sisters that don't drive. One has epilepsy and the other one just never learned. My sister is now 74. I'm the youngest. And she says, oh, I'm so scared when I'm down there. And she goes to the PTEL, which is platform telephone, and she hits it and hello, hello. And, you know, we have cameras. So if you activate a PTEL, they're looking at you on the camera. Well, I tried to explain to her that essentially you're kind of like a mouse in a box. You keep hitting that microphone and running around, and they keep following you, wondering what's happening to you. But it's another way that we try to bridge that communication gap. So the point I'm trying to make to you is if you've ever wanted to ride the train and you think that nobody's out there and the stations are empty and it's desolate, it's not a perfect system, but 90% of the time, somebody's out there with you, whether you see them or not. There's always help available whether you see it or not. And we have platform telephones on each end. They're usually on a big kiosk that shows you a picture of the map, and it looks a lot like a hotel intercom system, where you push the button and you can talk and that kind of thing. So that is another way that we really, really try our best to ensure that all of our passengers feel safe, all of them feel like they're empowered to ride the system. I hear a lot of people have a lot of apprehensiveness about the overall large size of the system. You know, you guys really have one step above the general population because you go online. And a lot of you really are senior citizens. A lot of them do not even attempt to go online. They don't navigate around the system. I would bet some of you are way smarter than me on my laptop. I could probably come here and join this club and learn quite a few things. So in that in itself, that's very empowering because when you get out there, Metro also, as Charles will tell you, has so many systems that we have. We have the same thing, MapQuest, start here, end here. It'll give you different ways of taking our system, how to take our system. Have we had difficulties out there? Definitely. I've had to abandon a train. I've had a train go off the platform, lose power. For whatever reason, you know, we lost what we call SCADA. Charles will go into that. We lost technical power because three of our trains run on light rail. That's the pantograph you see on the top, that big fork. And then the last of our train is heavy rail. That's the red line. You never, ever, ever want to get near any of that power. 750 volts of direct current. Each one of us have purchased a special pair of boots. We're trained very carefully on power. Big, big power restrictions for our safety so that we can make sure that you guys are safe. Whenever you're on a train, you might at one point feel that train stop and then hear a large bang. That's the power coming down. We're removing those big power lines from the top to make sure that all of us are clear of the power. So what happened on my particular train one time, we lost power. We didn't know why. Sometimes the city might have a main power outage, and it really has no control. We don't have any control over that. So we go, you know, we're also first responders. We have to make sure that we get everybody off. On train, each car has the ability to have an average of 50 to 70 people on it at a time. That's usually what it has. And I had to get to the end of the train, open the crew door, because we could only open one door. If you open every door and you're off the platform, so you want to, you know, let everybody know that ever happens to you and you're out there, just remain seated. Give the operator time to get to you. Give them time to kind of gather everybody, get everybody on board with what's happening, figuratively. Let everybody know what's happening. And then you go to the end and you exit them, one passenger at a time. And then you walk them as safely as you can to that platform. Because there's no walkway, it's ballast. Ballast are a rock that are made for railroads. It's porous, it's designed. It's not a natural rock that they find. That's why they all look identical. They turn a certain color when it's wet and we can tell that the tracks are slick. And the reason that they're that way is so that we can make sure that we don't have any sinking track and we always remain level. So when we're out there and we're exiting passengers and we're doing those things, everything is done so meticulously, which is why, you know why now, Metro has to send us to school forever, it seems like forever, to learn how to get out there and really operate this system because it's so complex. Although it's so small, it's certainly not New York. And I would be terrified to even be in New York. But it in its own right, there is just so much put into our system. I was truly impressed with it, that we really go that extra mile. I don't always like the amount of discipline that I receive because I think that it's so strenuous. But I know when I come out here and I see all of you, and I know you're somebody's brother and sister and mother and aunt, father, and I know how important it is for us to be that safe and how important it is for them to be as hard as they are on us and why it is set up that way. But the system itself, the margin for error, I would say, is about 1% or less. That's about what you're allowed. In-house, the operators, we like to say, there's no screw-ups on this team. We don't do screw-ups here. There's no redos. I think everybody saw the train that went into New York and went up the, that was pretty amazing to us because we were like, wow, that's just so hard for us to imagine how that happened. But I know their system is a little bit different than ours, and I can't speak on that, and my heart goes out to that city. But, the other rail that we do have is the red line, and it is the heavy rail. I just make sure the other thing that we have, and I think is a really good system, because I know you've all seen viral videos. How many of you have seen viral videos of train accidents and viral videos of people that fall off the platform? Every single train system that is built has what we call a duck-out path. Every system, whether it's New York, China, Chicago, and it's sad because it's a small thing that could save your life. If you ever fall on the tracks, go under the platform. Just remember that. Go under the platform. The train will not hit you. Every single train agency makes that platform that you're standing on is hollow. And it's there for that reason. It's a duck out. It's a safety, even for us. If you fall on the red line, you never want to go towards the wall because it's a heavy rail and it's the third rail on the floor that has 700 volts of direct current. So you never want to go near there. I don't care if it's your $800 cell phone, your mother's wedding ring, that beautiful special gift the kids gave you, leave it there. We will come to you. We will go down there. We will stop the trains, and we will retrieve whatever item, whether it's one earring, a pair of expensive sunglasses. We cannot emphasize that enough. How many people have actually done that? Jump off and say, why? My sunglasses. You're like, oh my gosh, really? Because somebody loves you and wants to see you home tonight, and they don't care about those sunglasses. So remember that if you're ever, 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 I don't care what city you're in, if you ever fall on those tracks, get under that duck out. Every system has it. Every system knows it's there. The other thing that you have to remember, and this is a big problem even on our system, if you're ever on a train and it stops, just randomly before it goes in the station, and everybody's wondering, are we here, are we there? And it hasn't gone all the way in. The Public Utility Commission requires us to make sure that every platform has access to the tracks. But those access gates are alarmed. They're a silent alarm, so you don't hear them. But guess who hears them? The train. Because our technology is that good, it's not going directly from the fence to the train, but it's going to that control center. It's going to Charles' people. And they don't even ask me. They don't say, do you see anybody? All I hear is, I'm T99, by the way. Every train engineer has a number. I'm T99. I like to pretend I'm Maxwell Smart's double agent. Some people I say that to, their faces are blank. I'm like, oh, God, they're too young. They don't know what that meant. But what's so amazing about that is that everybody goes on heightened alert. So he'll say, T99, stop the train, stop the train, stop the train. He doesn't say, T99, when you get a minute, stop the train. Now, stop the train. Because that means it took a human being to open that gate. What are they doing? Who knows? You know, sometimes people actually don't realize that's not going anywhere. It's just accessing for whatever maintenance or for whatever reason we need that gate open. It's not going anywhere. Sometimes people get confused, disoriented, open it by accident. But there is a good use for that. If you're ever at a platform and you see somebody fall and they're unconscious, one of the things you could do is find that gate. There's one on each end. You can't miss them. They're clear as day. Just open it. Don't go out it. Don't do anything else to it. Or, again, find a PTEL. Find some way to communicate. Call 911. Whatever it takes. Every single station you're at will tell you where you are. The reason I tell people that is because, you know, I think that a lot of times people get out on our system, and I do see accidents. Of course, I have heard of accidents. Of course I have. I don't always like to talk about them, and they're not always with our system. A lot of them are not with our system. And we learn from other systems just like they learn from us. But a lot of times, the things that we do see out there, you think, gosh, if they would have just, if had they have just known, or could they have just, and that's the same thing even when you're on the train. You know, a question to you that may not seem significant, like maybe you feel like you really are lost, you don't know where the hell you got off, and where the heck you got off, and where the heck you were supposed to be, that might not be an emergency to me, because I do this job every day and I'm on the system. But you know what? It might be an emergency to you. And that's not my call. And maybe you're diabetic or whatever. You need it to be at a treatment at a specific time. Do not allow the word emergency to make you apprehensive about accessing any of our system. That is not the purpose for us. And I know a lot of people, I think the McDonald's question is probably clear that we would all agree that's probably a little not so emergency. And we do get those questions, believe it or not. Do you know where McDonald's is? You know, my kids want the one with the Playland. I mean, we do get those, and those we will say, ma'am, I'm sorry, this is not for that, blah, blah, blah. But if you tell me you did lose something, believe it or not, if you leave your watch, cell phones, we have tons. We could start a cell phone company. We have tons of cell phones that get turned in. Believe it or not, they're, you know, Angelenos are pretty dang honest people, despite the 5 o'clock news that only really flashes us the real scary part. I have had cell phones turned in, bicycles turned in, laptops turned in, medical equipment turned in, purses turned in. So whenever that happens to you also, make sure, contact the operator. Get out, get to a PTEL, contact the control center. The other thing that I like to tell people about our train, every single car has a number. Every car in the fleet. When I pull the train out, I have to record my number and the car number I'm operating and the cars behind me. Every single car has a number. So if you ever get in a rail car, just as a mental note, you'll think about this after today. When the train's pulling in, right up in the corner, right above the operator's head where the window is, you'll see three big numbers, 208, 209, 20-something. The good thing is they all start with a 2. So you only got to really remember the next two numbers. And that's the entire fleet. The reason I tell people that is because sometimes when when they do leave something or they do feel the urge to contact somebody or something does happen, I ask them, because my control panel on my train, I wish I would have had the slides because it's like this huge. And all these things are lit up. Looks like a Christmas tree. The one number it doesn't give me is a car. Doesn't tell me the car you're in. So I will ask people, where are you? And they say, in the train. And I'm like, I got that much because you wouldn't be talking to me if you were running alongside of it. And, of course, they don't know that, but it kind of makes me chuckle. And I think, okay. And I try to tell myself, well, how can I get them to figure out where they are? You know, help them to help me to help them. And a lot of times I will tell them, okay, stand up, look on each end of the car, and above each door is a number. Can you give me that number? And when they give me the number, the side with the big wire on the top, that's always the A. Stands for the power, the electricity. The other end, without the big pantograph, is always called the B. And the center, where all the wheels are, is the C. So we call it the A truck, the B truck, and the C truck. Trains don't have wheels. We call them trucks. When we call anything in, we'll say, I hear a noise out of the A truck. I hear a noise out of the B truck, out of the C truck. So I always ask the passengers, is there a letter after the number? And they say, yeah, there's an A. And then I know right where they are. Because if I'm in the B end, right, C, and no, there's no number, there's no. And it really helps me. Because when I call the control center, Charles people, then I can tell the sheriff, tell the officer, the passenger, blah, blah, blah. Now, we've had people assisted by sheriffs, not always, surprisingly, for things that are related to crime. We've had people that just get lost. We've had people that the sheriffs want to return something back to them. And then we have people that were rendezvousing. Sometimes people get disconnected from people. Somebody gets off. My husband got off the train, and the husband's at the next station saying, my wife didn't get off. See, my husband didn't get on. We don't really know who's going to win that fight in the end, but we're going to help rendezvous them back together. So we make sure that we complete that section. We have children that get separated from their parents. Not real young, but, you know, 12, 13, enough to kind of shake them up, and they'll say, my mom got off at the last station. So these are all the things that we're doing. Even though we're in the cab, we're still running all that stuff in the back of that train. So the important thing is there's always four means of communication on the train. Two in the middle, one in each end. One of the most important things is know what car you're in. Those numbers are located on each end. Important, most important piece of advice I could give you, if you ever see anybody fall off the train, go underneath the duckout. But one of the most crucial things that I will ever tell you about the train is that there's a beveled edge and a line that says, do not cross. That is the most crucial part of my operation of the day. That's where you give me a heart attack every day. The beveled edge is the distance that we can do our best to protect you should something be hanging off the train or... Now, I have never seen this in my life, in my whole career, because there is a process of inspection that's done on that train every day. I have to pull those mirrors. I better make sure everything is mounted tight, screwed down, every bolt is in, and that train's ready to go to service that day. But this is not a perfect world. So that beveled edge is that 18, 20 inches of path that we want you to be clear of. Now, we do have people that stay behind the beveled edge and then go like this. That is, you're my nightmare in the middle of the night. I do know of people that have hit themselves on the train. The train doesn't hit you because it's on the track. But people that actually have leaned in and got struck. So that is there for your protection. These are all things where people have come out and we've spent way more money than we should to tell you not to bend over and be safe. The other thing is, if you notice, when the train berths, there's about this much distance, right, between that beveled edge and the inside of the train, right? I mean, there's no room. There's absolutely no room. Literally, I think it's 2.5 to 3 inches, possibly. I know that my boot, the width of my boot cannot fit down the side of it. I have seen children's legs go down, and thank God they're so small, they jump up so quickly. But trains have levelers, so when they're pulling in the station, you may not see it, but the train is leveling itself. So it's the platform is affixed. So the train's coming in, and it's berthing, and it's and if you're ever out there at night, I'm the last train at night, even though I don't need to be. I torture myself. I'm the last train, and it's very quiet, and the train will find the point of level. And then it'll be parallel with the platform. So what that beveled edge does is it protects you. It protects you, the passenger. But a lot of times, even when people drop things, even though the train is coming, this happened to me about 4 or 5 days before my last shift ended. I'm coming into Wilmington Station. Is everybody familiar with Wilmington? Blue Line, the 105 freeway. You guys know where the 105 and then the blue line, the green line goes down the 105. Okay, that's me. Then the blue line comes underneath me. So a guy, I'm coming in, that my train is an automatic. My first run of the day, I'm in manual operation. My train's an automatic, and I'm pulling in the station, and I'm berthing at about 37 to 40 miles an hour, and I see everybody. So I'm already hovering over what we call as an emergency brake. So I'm ready to, but you have to be vested if you're going to apply that brake, because you want to time your speed and your distance. What's your jerk going to be? How abrasive is your stop going to be? Well, then we have this other nice gift that these beautiful, intelligent, creative engineers came up with. They made sanders. So underneath the train, they put 2,000 pounds of sand. And they filled them in these big boxes. And they gave me this beautiful big button. And all of my trucks, I can drop 50 to 100 pounds of sand in a second. So I'm getting grit on my trucks because it's steel on steel. And I'm seeing him and my mind is doing the calculation, but everybody's bending over. And I think, oh, Lord, what are they looking for? Minute, you know, I can see it. But I'm pacing the speed because, as this sweet young lady said, she said, that's me always looking over. But now I have 40 of them are doing that. When it's one or two, but when it's 40, you're thinking, oh, Lord, what happened? Is there a human being down there? Now my brain's going, split seconds. I've got to make these decisions quick, quick, quick. I'm coming in, and the guy jumps off the platform. Bam, hit the brake. No questions asked. My mind did not need any convincing at that point. Calculations were over. Brake is applied. Thank God we had already dropped enough sand. The trucks, the training God, in that second, I'm thinking, I'm so glad they're so hard on us, but not when they're spanking me, you know. And I thought, oh my gosh, the training kicks in. So he jumps off the platform, and now I see everybody pointing to me, to him. The train, I'm like, oh, I'm ahead of all of you guys. This train has stopped. The young man had dropped his cell phone. I think I dropped, you know, a few things. I thought maybe I needed a spare uniform that day. I don't know. I was like, boy. And all's well, ends well, you know, and I'm so grateful for that because, you know, that's somebody's baby, and I most certainly have 12 of my own beautiful grandchildren. And, you know, I just really can't imagine. I've never been in that situation where something happened and I wasn't able to utilize the training. Is it foolproof? No. But boy, we sure try. Yes, sir. You know what sadly what happens is a lot of times they get really afraid and they take off. Because they know they emergency stop the train and that kind of thing. But you know, what was more amazing was I was able to speak to the passengers, which is, by the way, the most essential thing in going back to the radio and all of that. And I hear my passengers say this all the time when I come out and do events like this, is, would you just tell us what the heck is going on? I cannot stand I don't care what it is, but don't leave me back there like an idiot. And I get it. Because I get it the worst at Thanksgiving and Christmas. My sisters, boy, they tell me, I am so sick of you guys not telling us what the hell's going on that train. And I get it. So I really, really try really hard. And it's funny because I told them that. And I said, I'm very sorry. It appears that a young man jumped off the platform, but we did not make contact with him. He is safe, back on the platform. And when I looked up, he was running down the side because he was scared. Scared kid. And I'm like, I was so glad to see him run. I was like, run, Forrest, run. I was so happy to see him run. So, you know, those are the things that I think that for all of us as operators, and I know I speak for all of us, every operator that goes out there, I can't think of any operator that doesn't have children or grandchildren you know, there's a lot of us as seniors. I work with a gentleman right now. He's coming up on 50 years. 50 years with the agency. I think he has 47 years or something. They've been there many years. You know, a few wars came and gone. We always tease him. The stripes on our lapels are five-year bars. You know, we always tease them and say, hey, can we have a couple of those bars so we can retire with you? You don't need them. You don't need them all to retire. We have a 23 and out system, so most of us could actually have been gone already. But a lot of them stay, and they're very good at what they do. Unfortunately, we are not a system that has not seen, you know, our share of fatalities. I know you've seen them on the news, but we try 150% of the time to make sure the number one priority for us is communication, that the communications stay intact, whether it's telling the passengers what just happened, making sure, because passengers get really fearful also, and they'll pull the emergency exits and think that they need to evacuate. You know, and I always say, give the operator a chance. Let him get to you. Because believe it or not, even though all that training is kicking in and everything is going, there's still the human side of me. My adrenaline is going. When that kid jumped off that platform, I'm telling you, I could feel my pulse around my throat. You know, it was just really intense moment. So I would say just give them that few seconds to kind of navigate to get to you, because then they're like, oh, I got to tell the passengers what happened to us, and then get it in there. The other thing is, too, when a train operates on the automatic system and the train ever stops for any reason, and a gate is opened or somebody is suspected to be in imminent danger, we automatically take the train over. We take it out of the automatic system. So we take these keys, we put it into the train, we key the power off, we key the power back on, and then we take the train over. So the train will not operate automatic because now there's a chance of a compromise of danger to somebody out there. So at any given time, we're eligible to take the train over if we deem it necessary. If we call the control center, it was Charles people. But we cannot do anything without their authorization. That's a very important thing. You are not a decision maker when you're out there. You can't just decide, make that train operate in this system, because they set up for you to go out there and that train needs to operate at that exact precise time. That's why a lot of times it sounds kind of rude when it says stand clear, doors closing. The trains are precise down to the minutes. So the next guy in back of me, I need to leave that station by exactly that time. If I'm over 3 minutes, I better be on this radio and I better be telling them why, and it better be a good reason why. And if I go beyond that 3 minutes and fail to tell them, he's going to tell me to 1018 him, which is call him on the telephone. And then we're probably going to have a really stiff conversation, because anything beyond 3 minutes is not acceptable. So that's how tight the system is ran. And it's ran that way because it all comes back down to safety. If it got too sloppy and out of sync, it just wouldn't be a good thing. It really needs to maintain its safety based on the amount of control that Charles people, the control center, has over us. But I'm very interested myself, I have to admit. I've never been with Charles. I've never met Charles. But all these years, Charles' department is over me. And Charles people are kind of like my boss kind of thing. So it's kind of interesting, because even though we're aware of all these other systems that are in place to run our system, it's going to be nice to hear their version of how our system works and see the technicals on it. But I hope I didn't bore you guys. Thank you so much. And if there's any questions you guys have, I would.
I have two questions.
Sure.
How long does the train travels
based on its speed. He wanted to know, when I hit the emergency button, when I saw the young man jump off, how far did the train travel? The train travels based on its speed and based on the part of track it's traveling. For me, fortunately, in that particular station, it was on an uphill. So when I just came over the hill and I saw him, I dropped the sand, which then slows the train down even more. So for me, the train probably only traveled about maybe 1,100 feet, it's still very considerable. But when you think 37 miles per hour for a vehicle that is 80 feet long and times 3, That's pretty amazing. That's the ATO. That's the automatic train. Although I like to... I will say that I was an operator that started at the Blue Line. The Blue Line is the oldest system we have. Japan made those cars. They're almost 30 years old. And they're best car we have. Love that car. People complain about it. Love it. But that car, we have learned to pull it back. The way the train is powered, so you pull it back, and then you brake. So you pull it down, and then you slowly feather it, and you can actually get the same effect. And after about, I know it sounds funny, but after about 5 years, you get as good as that ATO. It takes you a while, but you actually do get as good as that ATO. And then you are annoyed because the ATO, when you engage it, it thinks. It does all the safety check, and then it takes off, where we just take off. But, you know, we want to believe we're smarter than the machine, of course. Most of them, 99% of them, there is no charge at this point. Yes. Yes, 99% of them, there's no charge. But starting March 1st, right, I'm sorry. I've been off work for about 3 weeks. I was told that they were going to have to start charging. So that's really unfortunate, but $3 still isn't that bad, I'd like to believe. But I don't know what the comparative is. Yeah. Anything else? And you know, it's usually not the train you see coming. That's not the train that you're really in danger of. Most, you know, all tracks are doubled. So it's usually 90% of the time, it's the one you don't see. You make it past that first one, and you never see there's another one coming on the other side. And it's, and you know, we even have programs where I go into schools. Oh, yeah, I'll go into schools, and, you know, we wear a lot of reflective gear, and I'm glad you brought that out, at night. We're not allowed on the ballast unless we have on that big orange vest. And I always shut all the lights off, and the kids, you know, they always see me lit up. And I always ask them, but who don't you see? But that's one of the things that we really do. And a lot of Metro's programs that they have are operators that volunteer. I mean, they go in and they, because we're the ones that, like you said, they're so brave. They're immortal. Kids are going to live forever. They have no fear of death, you know. I mean, it's just being young. It's the gift of being young. And when I see it too, the kids, the only thing that really strikes me sometimes is when I hear kids say, it doesn't look like it's going that fast. I said, oh, it's going fast. The one that I operate goes 65. It's moving. The red line goes up to 75. I believe it's 75. That thing's pulling into that station at 75. I don't know if any of you have ever been on the red line, and you can even hear it in the tunnel. Ooh, it's whistling. It's just the amount of momentum that thing is coming in on. And it's just unbelievable. And but it doesn't look like it's really moving fast when it's approaching. But right when it bursts, boy, it's just there. And it's there quick. And we can't, you know, we can't cripple the system either, where we want to make everything 10 miles an hour because then nobody would get around anywhere, you know, kind of thing. Oh, I'm sorry. I know. I'm sorry. He was waiting. He had one. Oh, good. I will leave it up to Charles. Thank you. Come and see me on the train, please. Sorry.
And I manage the engineering, operation, and maintenance of the computer, the central computers that supervise all of this stuff, supervise all the trains from one place, so we don't have to have people spread all over the system in order to run the trains. And everything that Arlene talked about, down to the telephones, the radio, all of that is computerized now. That radio is a digital system. Not like your old AM or ham radio. It's a little computer, and it talks to bigger computers that get that communications to where they need to go. So that's what I'm going to talk about, is more of the computers that are used for this operation. And just really quickly, facts at a glance, and also you've been sitting for a long time. If you want to stand up and walk around when I'm speaking, that's fine. It doesn't disturb me. We operate 105 miles of rail. 760,000 boardings per week. Red Line, Subway, Purple Line, 16 stations. Light Rail now is growing to more than 60 stations. So we're a big system now. That's what our map looks like today, and it's still growing. And we have a lot of new things under construction, some of which you've probably seen. Crenshaw Line, which one day in 2025 will have an airport connector. But for now, it'll connect Green Line to Crenshaw Line, which gives you a better way to get downtown. Regional connector, very exciting. It'll connect Blue Line and Gold Line together. You can go from the beach to Claremont on one train. And our very exciting station, the LAX connector, will connect our line to a people mover. That'll take you right into the airport. That's the 96th Street airport connector that they're building right now. Now I'm too low. How's that? Okay. I'll go like this. But that there's no station like that in our system today. So that's going to be a very exciting thing. Let me do it this way. How's that? So how do computers fit into our system? Our trains don't need computers to run. Okay, the computers just help them run more efficiently, more safely, and more reliably. What the computers do is they help connect people to the system. So I don't have to be at the train in order to make sure that the train is doing what it needs to do and make sure that it's doing it safely. And what are computers used for in Metro? Everything. There's a computer in the elevator. There's three computers in the train. In one train door, there's three computers to make sure that door opens and closes safely. They're in the stations, they're in the trains, and they're at what, where I work, the central control system. And we'll talk about that in some future slides. Like I said, they're everywhere. But they're not all the computers that you're used to, like this laptop here. This is something you're very familiar with. That picture there is a computer inside the train. That's what makes the train run automatically and run safely. It's a special computer that allows connections to the physical world as opposed to your computer, which just sends email and opens up web pages. Here's some examples of computers and rail we talked about. If you've ever ridden on a bus, Metro doesn't own the streets. We don't own the traffic lights. We don't own anything except the bus and maybe the shelters. But in rail, we own everything. We own the tracks, the stations, the elevators, the escalators, the power. And because of that, we have to manage that whole entire infrastructure to make sure that your trains can get you from one place to another. And computers help us do that. We have a lot of experience using computers to talk to other people. Email, you see what people write on web pages and blogs. The computers that I deal with, they talk to people on one end, but on the other end, they connect to the physical world. They have sensors so that we can tell where trains are. We can tell if an elevator is not running. On the other end, there's actuators where we can make the train move from one track to another. And all that can be done from one central location. I want to say a word or two about safety. Unfortunately, my slide got cut off there. I don't know why. Computers do a lot to make our system safe. But in the end, it's the people that are responsible for safety. We talked about a crossing gate. Near the end of this presentation, we'll talk about how they actually work. They're extremely safe. Those gates are going to come down when they need to come down. They're going to go up when they need to go up. But as a person, if you go through that gate, we can't help you. Computers make the train go.
But people make the train stop if there's someone who jumps onto the tracks. Our cameras are digital cameras. They're computerized on a network. But people are looking at those images to make sure there's no crimes and that people aren't looking over the platform. If you do that on the platform, you may hear someone over a PA system tell you, hey, stand back from the platform. And computers are not perfect. Systems aren't perfect. So in the end, people have to be there to take over and make sure that the system is doing what it needs to do. So here's some pictures of the computers at the Central Control Center. On the top left, you see a CCTV observer. That would be a person that's watching the cameras to make sure that a crowd isn't forming at the station, that people aren't jumping over the edge, that there's not a crime being committed. Let me try this again. And then on the bottom right is a train dispatcher. Those personnel can see all the trains on the system and can control where they're going. They know if they're late. They know if they're on time. They know if they have to turn back a train early because there's a blockage in the tracks. They have full control and full supervision of all the trains from one place. So we use something called a SCADA system, which you might not have ever heard of. It stands for Supervisory Control and Data Acquisition. Basically, it's a fancy name for saying it's a computer that monitors and controls things. And it's not unlike things that you are familiar with, like your ADT Pulse, if you have a security system. That has sensors. You can see what's going on from one central location. You can arm and disarm. Nest. Who has a Nest? Nest thermometer? Nobody has one? You can, for whatever reason, you can turn your heat on from work at your house or see how warm your, you know, if it's hot or cold in your house from your cell phone. Our computers are like that, but they're much bigger. We connect to our entire rail system, not just to your thermostat and a few doors. Just to give you some size, on our light rail, we talk to 27,000 different things from our central computer system. On the subway, which really is a lot smaller than our light rail, we talk to 17,000 different things. We're just not monitoring trains. To be safe, we got to monitor for fire at the stations. Our underground stations have poisonous gases that can build up. We're monitoring that. We can turn on emergency ventilation if gas or smoke builds up in the station. All of that stuff is, again, monitored and controlled from a central location and make sure that when you're at that platform, you're kept safe. You might think to yourself, what could be unsafe about an elevator or an escalator? Why do we have to monitor that? Well, if you're in a wheelchair and that elevator isn't running, how are you going to get out of the station? So we want to know that that elevator isn't running before you have to go and use it. Because if you have somebody helping you, they might try and do something stupid. They might try and take you up the escalator. And we've had that happen, and people have gotten seriously hurt. We actually do have units. We have, right now we have three different systems. We want to combine them all into one. And it'll actually run on Windows. But this is what they see at the central control system to supervise trains. Those white lines are tracks. The orange symbol is a train. We can see the crossing gates, the signals, the switches. We can control them all from a computer screen. We also have to control the power to the trains. We can turn power on. If there's an emergency, we can turn it off, especially on light rail. If there's an accident at a crossing or a car gets on the tracks, we can turn off that power so the fire department can get in there and safely respond to the situation. I mentioned emergency ventilation. All our underground stations have emergency ventilation. If there's fire or smoke, we're going to keep what we call a tenable environment. which means an environment you could survive in, and you will be able to get out of that station and, you know, get out and be safe. So that's a bit about how the computers supervise and control the system from a central location. But I want to kind of talk to you about some things you might not know about how trains operate. And you can learn about how trains actually are controlled automatically and safely. That's a picture from our 1992 design for the Green Line, which was our first automatic system. I don't expect you to be able to read that, but you can kind of see all these things connected to each other. The top thing is the train, that line going across the middle is the tracks. And those are all these systems that the train is talking to be able to run safely and automatically. The key component to this is being able to detect trains on the tracks. And that's done with something called a track circuit. Every time a train is on a track, it forms a circuit, just like an electrical circuit, like you turn a light bulb on. There's a transmitter on one section of track, a receiver on the other. And as the train goes across the track, I don't think this has a pointer, that blue, that grayish line there is the axle of the train. It shorts that circuit out. That's how we detect the train in that section. The next section, the train moves over, shorts that section out, and tells us that the train has moved. Oops. Once we know where the trains are, we could even tell you. That's one of the Metro apps. That's, if you go to nextbus.com, you can find our trains on the map. If you go to metro.net, right on the front page, you can find a link to see our trains on a map. And you could watch them move automatically. But we can do more. Once we can detect where trains are, we can make sure they don't get too close together and they don't collide with each other. So that left red box would be a train shorting the track, let's say in Santa Monica. The next red box is a train ahead of it, let's say in at Olympic Boulevard. Once we know that there are trains there, we can send signals to the trains to make sure they don't get too close together. And that's always happening. So we'll never allow a train to run up and collide with a train in front of it. Likewise, we'll never allow two trains to go towards each other and collide. Then we protect trains with signals, just like traffic signals, you know, when you're driving your car. Only these operate under much stricter rules called interlocking. They'll only allow certain things to happen, and it's all done by computers. So, for example, we've got two trains on two different tracks going different directions. That's safe, right? They can't hit each other. The system will not allow you to route that train that's red up into that top track to collide into the other train. That's done without any people. No people are involved in that. I could all day long try and route that train up onto that track. The system won't let me. So when a train operator sees a green signal, he knows he's safe. If he sees a red signal, he knows he has to stop. And if he doesn't stop, the train's going to stop automatically. So when you ride on our trains, you're protected by all these things. Grade crossings, same thing. Once we can detect where trains are, we can detect when they're approaching a grade crossing. That's how the gates start to drop. We detect a train on approach, the gates start dropping. As a train is detected to leave the crossing, the gates go back up. And all of this stuff is done with a technology called Vital Fail Safe. If there's any failure in the system, all of our equipment goes to the safest state. What's the safest state for a train? Stop. If there's any failure in a train, it's going to stop. That's why trains stop a lot, because something happened. And then hopefully the train operator is going to tell you, well, I just got to reset it, and hopefully it'll fix itself. Crossing gates are the same way. If there's any failure in the system, the entrance gates are going to drop. If we lose power, the gates are going to drop. If for some reason we can't detect trains, it's going to assume a train's coming. and it's going to stop. There's one gate, though, that will fail in the up position. That's the exit gate, because we don't want to trap you inside a crossing. Then we've made it unsafe. And we could even detect trains inside the cross, or cars inside the crossing. On that picture on the right, you can see it looks like a little car symbol. If we detect that you've driven your car into the intersection when the gates are going down, we'll keep the exit gate up. So, we'll do all that, but again, you've got to do your part. If you think the gates are down for too long, go a different way. You know, don't try and go through the gates. Now here comes our dirty little secret. Those little yellow and red things and green things, those symbolize the crossing gates going up and down. But in this little green circled area, those are other roads that are crossing the tracks. You've seen it in downtown Santa Monica. You'll see it in downtown LA. There's no crossing gates. So that crossing is not protected. You know, why is that? You know, we say we do all this stuff to make you safe. Save money is one reason. It's because there's a lot of restrictions where we build these rail lines. We don't necessarily get to dictate everything about the geography. Sometimes we have to run trains right down the middle of, you know, a street that has a lot of cross streets right next to each other. We couldn't fence that off. We couldn't put gates up there. The whole place would just be gridlocked. So they allow us to run in these unprotected crossings. And in that section, the train operator is fully in control. They have to operate like a bus. They have to watch out for trains ahead, for cars in the intersection, for people walking across the tracks because there's no fence or gates. There's very limited protection other than the train won't let them go 35 miles an hour. But it's safer than that. We still won't let trains go towards each other. There's still those protections. But understand that we do have these sections of track that don't have automatic protections. And that's my abrupt end to my presentation. Because I'm not really sure what you wanted to learn. So I basically told you there's all these computers here. We have a lot of safety built into the operation of our trains. This would be an opportunity for you to say, hey, but I really wanted to know about this, or I wanted to know about that. And hopefully I can answer some of those questions.